It is 6:07 on the Central Coast as we enter our final hour of Hometown Radio on this Monday, October 25th, 2021. I'm Dave Congleton, and we are pleased to offer you a conversation with Mr. Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. There's all sorts of news in the gun world. We wanted to reach out to Matt and hear from him. He joins us now. Matt, good evening.
Good evening, Dave. Good to hear you, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we got that. Talk about restricted. We got restricted here, too. How are you, sir? How you been?
Doing pretty well. Keeping busy. Trying to pack up the house. We'll be moving to the Valley next month.
But you're not leaving your obligation to this show.
I have been informed by yourself that, no, I'm not allowed to do that.
No, you're not allowed to do that. boy, there's all sorts of stuff in the news here that we want to get your reaction to. Let me start with the New York Kerry case and what's going to happen with the Supreme Court next week.
Okay, so next week on Wednesday, the Supreme Court's going to hear the first Second Amendment case it's heard in about a decade. The last one it heard was McDonald versus Chicago, which basically, through the 14th Amendment, incorporated the Second Amendment as applying to the states as well. So it said you couldn't ban handguns. And so the Supreme Court's basically been silent for the last 10 years. They've turned down numerous cases. There was some speculation that they were going to kind of lose Anthony Kennedy if they tried to expand the Second Amendment jurisprudence any. Kennedy's gone. He's been replaced with Gorsuch. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's gone. She's been replaced with Amy Coney Barrett. And they took a case, and the case out in New York is basically against taking aim at New York State's may issue gun policy. State of New York, you have to go before, you know, it depends county to county a little bit. You either have to go before the chief of police, or you've got to go before a judge, and, you know, prove that you have a special reason for needing to carry a gun. And so the main complainant in the case lives in a rural county. He doesn't live in New York City. And he had applied for a permit to carry his gun around. There have been crimes, you know, robberies in the area and whatnot. And I heard an interview with him on a podcast a couple weeks ago, and he basically said that, you know, he went before a judge, and there's four judges in that county, and it's kind of randomly assigned to one, and he got randomly assigned to the wrong judge. Three of them probably would have said, you can have it, and the fourth one always said no. And so that's kind of the basis of this lawsuit. You've got there's a case here in California, or in the Ninth Circuit, rather, out of Hawaii, where just a few months ago, the Ninth Circuit overruled a panel decision, and basically the Ninth Circuit has read out of the Second Amendment bare arms. A few years ago, they said there's no right to carry a concealed weapon. And then earlier this year, they said there's no right to carry a weapon openly.
So you don't have the right.
There's really no right to carry a weapon.
You don't have the right to bear arms. You have the right to own a gun, but not to carry it.
Yeah, you can't take it anywhere. Hmm. So the consensus is that they're going to, you know, you're going to get at least five votes and maybe six to strike it down. We may lose Roberts, or Roberts may stay, you know, on the pro Second Amendment side in order to kind of limit how far they go. But that will affect laws here in California. Well, I think there's only seven of the 50 states that have what are called may issue, where somebody decides whether you've got a good enough reason. The other 43 states, about a dozen of them are constitutional carry. You don't even need a permit. And the rest are shall issue, which it means is as long as you're not a prohibited person, if you want a concealed carry license, we'll give you one.
So then what's California considered?
California is considered may issue.
Okay.
Whether you can carry a gun is dependent on either your local chief of police or your county sheriff.
Yeah.
And there are some counties where if you say, I want to carry a gun because of self-defense, congratulations, you can carry a gun. And, you know, and as long as you're not a felon or a prohibited possessor of other sorts, as long as you meet all the kind of standard requirements,
yeah.
They can't look at you and say, oh, I don't trust you. No, you can't get it.
But I would imagine,
so, you know,
though,
Fresno
Matt.
County.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, though, as a gun advocate, you don't sound like you're concerned about this Supreme Court.
They didn't take a case for about a decade. And I think they didn't take a case, even though some of them were really good cases. I think the facts were really clean. Because I think Kennedy got squishy after McDonald. I don't think they would have accepted this case if they weren't going to say there is a right to carry a firearm or other weapon in case of confrontation outside the home.
Yeah.
You know, barring, you know, the mentally ill can't do it, felons can't do it, that sort of thing. But the average law-abiding citizen, I don't think they would have taken this case if they weren't going to strike down New York's law.
All right, we are in conversation with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com, just giving us an update on what's happening with different gun issues. When we come back, I want Matt to explain this new law that Governor Newsom signed. It was AB 173. It's now the law. What you as a gun owner need to know about the information that's available out there about you. You're listening to Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. We'll be right back. You're with Dave Congleton, and we are with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. In this segment, Matt wrote on his site, late last month, Governor Newsom signed into law a bill that would give, quote, gun violence researchers access to the name and address of just about every gun owner in the state, along with a complete list of firearms they own, along with their ammunition. And when the underlying provision becomes law, gun parts purchases. This was AB 173. All right, Matt, dissect this for us. What was the motive behind the law? This was introduced by Assemblyman Phil Ting.
Yeah. I think the motive behind the law was partly to give underlying data to Dr. Garen Winnemute at UC Davis and his Gun Violence Research Center, and by extension, other gun violence researchers across the country. I think that was kind of how they sold it. And frankly, they didn't even really sell it, because this bill that they passed it under, it didn't go through the normal committee process. This language was added in as part of the budgeting process at the very last minute. It didn't get when it was part of AB 1237 that was put in the suspense file. It didn't get out of committee. So they added this in at the last minute as part of the budget process to kind of avoid scrutiny. I'm not necessarily I'm not sure how much good it's going to do, but I'm not necessarily opposed to giving anonymized data to gun violence researchers or to anyone else who wants to use that data to kind of figure out, you know, is there some connection between the amount of guns or number of guns owned by law-abiding citizens to the crime rate in certain areas, or, you know, those sorts of questions. But I cannot for the life of me figure out why those gun violence researchers and what benefit they would receive from knowing the name and address of each of these people.
So in your case, you know, what would be revealed about you? What kind of information would they reveal about Matt Hoy?
They would reveal that Matt Hoy lives at this at a certain address, that he that this is his name, this is his address, he owns this rifle A, rifle B, rifle C, shotgun D, handgun A, B, C, D, the makes and models of all of those, possibly serial numbers of all of those. And I'm kind of the belief that they included this in the law because they know it's eventually going to leak. And then it becomes a shopping list for criminals, frankly. You want, you know, do you want a 1939 National Typewriter M1 Garand? Well, punch it in the database that's, you know, going to be leaked online. You can see everyone in California who owns one of those.
What makes us so sure it's going to be leaked?
Well, if you know what happens to you if you leak this database legally in the law? Absolutely nothing. There is no penalty, criminal penalty for leaking my, you know, my or any other gun owner's private information. There is not even any statement in the law that says if you misuse the private information in some way that you are banned from further access to the database. You know, California was just before the Supreme Court last year. Ruling came down earlier this year on California's requirement that nonprofits soliciting money in the state had to give their large donor lists to the Department of Justice, the California Department of Justice. And they said that this was because we need to use this to ferret out fraud.
Is there anything else they collect about you other than name, address, number of guns you have? Anything else they pull out of this, Matt?
Type of guns I have, model numbers, make numbers, possibly serial numbers, but it's a Colt revolver model, whatever. You know, it would have that much detail. It would also have a list of when I have bought ammunition, since we've had these ammunition background checks. Frankly, I haven't bought any in the States. I stocked up big time beforehand. Right. So I haven't had to buy any ammunition, but any ammunition I bought, quantities when I bought it. And later this year, they're going to require background checks for gun parts. So if, you know, I've got a gun and, you know, while I'm cleaning it or something, a spring pops off and I can't find it and I need to buy a, you know, tiny little spring for my gun, you'll know that I bought a tiny little spring for one of my guns.
So do the police already have this information in their system?
They can get at it.
All right.
The state will provide that information to law enforcement. I mean, if they've got a guy who, you know, commits a shooting, certainly the local cops are going to go to the DOJ and say, well, is this the only gun he had?
All right. So,
and that's something that normally occurs if someone's arrested for a crime. It's, okay, we've arrested you, we're going to hold you, and we're going to charge you for this. You have to give up all your guns, and they'll consult the state database to determine what those guns are and that you've turned them all over.
All right. Well, because I know you're not a fan necessarily of the James Brady Center, but here's their take on the law. Results from this research, referring to the information that you're talking about, have informed firearm safety laws and policies in California and across the nation, provided an important resource for law enforcement and public health and healthcare professionals, and made major contributions in advancing the understanding of firearm violence. That's why I'm trying to figure out if they collect more information than just name, address, the number of guns you have, types of guns you have.
I'd encourage you, I'd ask you to point me towards that, because the law just went into effect, well, it was just signed months ago. I'm not sure if it's actually been released to anyone. For them to claim, oh, we've accomplished all of this because of data that they don't have yet, that's how much you can trust them. They're liars.
Well, this is what they're claiming, Matt. And let me just make the point, please. Lately, the California Department of Justice has stopped sharing this vital research, creating a barrier to better understanding gun violence and saving lives. So they're arguing that this AB 173 merely restores a system that was already there.
It's a lie. I don't know what to, I don't know what, how else to explain it. Gun violence, a month ago or 2 months ago or a year ago, the Brady Center couldn't, or some academic institution couldn't get my name. And this is the other point I tried making. I tried doing some journalism. I was a journalist. I called up Phil Ting's office, and I called up UC Davis, where Dr. Darren Wintemute is, and contacted them. I got email addresses for the people who deal with, the press or the media, and I asked them, exactly what research do you propose that you would be doing that would benefit from having a name and address attached to the data that you couldn't analyze the same way based on removing that and just having it sorted by zip code or assessor parcel numbers, assessor parcel maps or voting precincts? What benefit do you get from knowing that Joe Schmo at 123 Main Street has these guns rather than in this, one square mile blah area of downtown Paso Robles, there are 75 gun owners who own, and you can pick out which one you want, how many guns that each one of them owns, but you don't know who they are and you don't know their exact address.
Right.
Neither of them responded to me. I've waited 2 weeks. Neither of us responded to me.
Cal Guns.
I can't figure it out.
Cal Guns said it came out against this bill. They explained it requires that the California Department of Justice supply state information, including personal identifying information, to the UC Gun Violence Research Center, and allows the DOJ to provide the same information to certain nonprofits and state agencies. Cal Guns is against it, Matt, over privacy concerns, as well as the fact that the information could be provided to groups that will bias their research over a certain agenda.
Well, Cal Guns is the California Rifle and Pistol Association. That's kind of their associated website. They sent a letter to Gavin Newsom asking him not to sign it because, there are privacy issues. The reason I think that this was written and they hope it and they anticipate that it's going to be leaked is there's no punishment for leaking any of it. And I'm befuddled by why you as a researcher doing like macro level research on,
You got to hold that thought, Matt Hoy. Here comes the news. Matt Hoy is with us. RestrictedArms.com is his website. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. We are talking guns with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. We're just talking about guns and issues in the news. So we start off talking about an important case that the Supreme Court is going to be taking up next week. We also talked about a new law that Governor Newsom signed that allows access to personal information about those of you who own guns in this state. And why Matt is concerned about privacy. And I guess before we move on, Matt, one other question that pops into mind is that, therefore, does a concern become this sets a precedent for access to information?
You know, I'm not opposed to necessarily access to information. It's just if you're doing kind of this macro-level research, I don't know how attaching a name and address to it benefits you.
Yep.
And I haven't gotten an answer from anyone that I've asked for.
All right. Other topic I want to pick your brain on is, of course, this tragic shooting on the movie set in New Mexico. And it gets a more frustrating twist here because the assistant director on the movie set was the guy who handed the gun to Alec Baldwin. The LA Times is reporting that the assistant director was fired after a gun incident on a movie set in 2019. They also have a second article that says that a veteran Hollywood prop master turned down this movie. He called it an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's... You know, we have gun safety laws or gun safety rules for a reason. And, you know, I was listening to like the California headline news that you guys were playing a little earlier today that talked about this and it referred to it as a prop gun, as though that is necessarily something different than a real gun. Well, a prop gun is just a real gun that's being used as a prop. A lot of those, you know, if you put a real bullet in it, it can still fire a real bullet, as we saw with the Alec Baldwin situation. One of the things, if you know, your listeners ever go to a gun store and they ask to look at a handgun or a rifle or a shotgun or anything else like that, the first thing the person behind the counter does is they grab that gun, they remove the magazine, or if it's a revolver, they open the cylinder, they pull back the slide, they make sure there's no bullet in the chamber, they make sure there's no bullet in the magazine, and they hand it to you. And you, having received that gun, should do the exact same thing before you point it at anyone, before you, and you shouldn't point it at anyone, but before you pull the trigger on. If you're trying to see, you know, do I like how that trigger feels? Is that going to be comfortable for me? Can I, you know, do that? I think there's quite a few Hollywood actors who are just handed the gun and treat it like, and don't respect it. I think that's where you see Alec Baldwin. I mean, there's other actors. Brad Pitt and Keanu Reeves come to mind, who, for roles they have and for training they've done, they know what those firearm safety rules are. They follow them when they're on set. They don't. You should, if you're being handed a real gun that's being used as a prop, you should check it before you pull the trigger. You know, point it at anyone or pull the trigger as part of the acting process. And Alec Baldwin didn't do that. I'm not, you know, I will leave whether he will be charged with, you know, involuntary manslaughter or something, or the director will be charged with that, or the assistant director who handed it to him will be charged with that to some lawyers. But if you are handed a real firearm, you have some responsibilities, matter what the reason.
On the Stolberg line, a listener wants to know if you can explain why they would have live rounds on a movie set in the first place.
They shouldn't. They should. I mean, that's another thing. You know, if you buy a handgun or something, one of the things, you know, that they encourage you to do is to practice with it. And you can't always get down to the range, but you can, you know, practice pulling the trigger and doing that properly. And what they'll say to you is, if you're going to do that with your gun, you need to make sure you need to take all the ammo out of your gun, and you need to go to a room where there's no ammo, where there's not even a chance where if you pull the trigger that something might find its way into the barrel, right? It's in a separate room. Some of the reporting I saw suggested that when they got bored out in nowhere, New Mexico, shooting this film, you know, somebody bought some boxes of ammunition. They'd go out and shoot tin cans or something. Big mistake, very bad idea. But this kind of, there was a whole bunch of breakdowns that occurred in order for this tragedy to happen. Having live ammo anywhere around is one. The assistant director not checking it or misinforming Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin not checking the gun when he was handed it. Him pointing it at people.
Apparently, he was practicing a cross draw when it happened.
Yeah, you don't need to be, you know, one of the rules is, you know what your target is and what's around it, behind it, in front, you know, all that other sort of stuff. I'm not sure he needed to be facing, you know, this assistant director, cinematographer, while he did that. I mean, he could have been facing, you know, sagebrush. Well, I think there's plenty of that in New Mexico. I've been through New Mexico.
Well, but hang on a second. They were sitting in the church, and they were trying to line up the camera angle for the next shot, and he was sitting in the pew, and he was practicing his draw, and that's when the gun went off.
The gun went off because he pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Again, did he need to pull the trigger for them to set that up and for him to practice drawing it?
I don't know.
You don't necessarily need to pull the trigger. I don't know. But again, you've got gun safety rules for a reason, and they're redundant, and it usually requires you to break two or more of them in order for somebody to get hurt. And two or more of them were broken here.
We have a listener texting on the Stolberg line wondering why an actor or an actress like Alec Baldwin would even know what a live round looks like.
Alec Baldwin has been in a lot of movies where he's fired guns.
Yeah.
I remember him in The Hunt for Red October. The difference between a live round and a blank is pretty darn apparent. And frankly, if you're going to be an actor on a movie where you're asked to handle guns, you dang well better know the difference between the two. And you should be able to know the difference between the two. Pleading ignorance is, I think that's out of line, frankly.
Well,
you know, he's not a 17-year-old kid, and this is the first movie he's been in, and he grew up in Beverly Hills and has never handled a gun before. I might have a little bit more compassion in that situation.
Yeah.
But he's been in a lot of movies where he's handled a lot of guns.
I'm going to put the focus more on the assistant director. I don't know. And particularly now that this other stuff is coming out, I want to know more about that guy.
Well, the other thing is Alec Baldwin's the producer on this thing, right?
One of 12.
He has some say in hiring and firing decisions. Why was this guy hired?
Well, having been involved with movies, sometimes somebody's given a title of producer just as a title and they're not involved in the day-to-day stuff. I don't know.
Possible. I assume this will all come out. But maybe this, you know, changes some of the way that Hollywood works, frankly. I saw a report that the TV show on ABC, The Rookie, is now going to, going forward, they aren't going to use real firearms with blanks. They are going to use airsoft guns that shoot little, you know, nothing plastic pellets, basically, as long as you don't get hit in the eye.
It can all be computer
and
generated.
And add in the muzzle flash in post-production, which is fine.
Yep. Craig, jump in here.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
The first rule of gun safety was broken. I mean, you do not trust any gun that you haven't personally inspected and confirmed. 2 weeks ago, I was showing my wife some gun twirling tricks. I know how to do gun twirling. So I pulled the gun out. I opened the cylinder. I showed her. I made sure she confirmed with me. You see that all cylinders are empty. You see the barrel is empty. And she said, yes, I see that. And then I proceeded to do some stuff. But at no time was she directly in front of me when I was doing that as well. You treat every gun, if it's loaded or not, you treat every gun as if it's loaded at all times. So that's like the first rule of handling firearms. Second, I'm looking at the movie. It's a Western, and takes place in the old days. So it's got to be a single action revolver that he was doing, and then he cross draw. So he's doing some kind of cowboy move. So that means he probably had to pull the hammer at the same time, or pull back the hammer at the same time as he pulled the gun out of the holster, which is a dangerous maneuver. If you have a loaded gun, you would never do that in real life with a loaded gun. And so I can see just it's a confluence of events.
Matt, what are you going to say?
You wouldn't do that with a loaded gun and still have all your toes.
Yeah, it's a recipe for getting yourself shot or anybody else.
All right, let's break away, and we'll come back for a final segment with Matt Hoy. We have spent the last hour with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. That's restrictedarms.com. He has been briefing us on a variety of issues all involving gun ownership in this country. If you want to join us, I haven't meant to exclude you. We've just gotten into our conversation. We would need to hear from you now, please. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. We've talked a little bit about this Supreme Court case on the horizon. We have also talked about this new law in California that allows gun researchers access to personal information about gun owners in the state. We've also talked a little bit about the Alec Baldwin Hollywood set situation. 805-543-8830 or 800-549-5832. But let me cut to the chase through all this, Matt, and take it a different direction for the last couple of minutes. And that is the idea of, particularly in the urban areas, with everything that is going on now, whether it's Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago or New York, do you see more Americans arming up in the next 10 years?
Well, they certainly have been arming up in the past two. The data from the, instant background checks, while it's not, necessarily one-to-one with each background check being a single gun purchase, it does set a floor. And you've seen the past year and a half, the highest number of firearms purchases in this country, since that system went into effect. Is that going to continue? When you've got defund the police, when you've got, those sorts of situations where, law enforcement is either underfunded or, being reticent to do the kind of proactive community policing, that tends to, lower violent crime, people are going to look at that and people are going to say, well, if I can't trust the police to get here and to defend me, then I've got to do it myself.
One article.
I think that's probably going to expand. I'm not sure if that's going to change the politics of it really quick, but we'll see.
One of the articles I saw, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the number offhand, but the biggest increase in gun ownership was among women. More and more women are getting guns.
Yep. Yeah, women and minorities have been buying a lot more guns. That's where the biggest growth has been. Statistically, you know, again, it's women generally smaller, weaker than men. It's just, you know, a fact of biology. You know, it's the old saw that God created men, Sam Colt made them equal. Yeah, if you're not you know, big and strong and able to fight somebody off physically, a gun's an equalizer. But people should train. They should get instruction. Just buying it, loading it with bullets, and putting it by your bedside, in those sorts of situations, if you have not, you know, grown up with guns or you have not gotten any proper training, in those situations, the gun may be more dangerous to you or someone in your household than it is to a potential attacker. So get training.
All right. And look, I don't have a problem with Second Amendment, but I'm wondering, listening to you, Matt, and the idea of that we're going to have this big increase in gun ownership in the years to come, is that healthy for our country that so many people are armed? And what is the message that that sends about us?
Well, Robert Heinlein, the author of a lot of science fiction books, you know, said an armed society is a polite society. what does that say about us? I don't know. I'm not sure it says, you know, that we're a bunch of barbarians like, you know, some of the politicians in other countries claim we are. Anytime there's an expansion of gun rights, and I say expansion, I shouldn't say that. It's more like a restoration of where they were before the 1930s and the 1960s. The pro-gun control side that, you know, it's going to be the Wild West. Well, the Wild West actually wasn't all that violent. And, you know, the pictures of the, of what these sorts of things, chaos reigning, never tend to come true when you expand the ability of law-abiding citizens to legally own and carry firearms.
I guess your perspective on whether or not the West was violent depends upon what end of the noose you were on. I don't know. Here, let me run this at you. On the Stahlberg line, listener writes, I'm on the left. I'm for defunding the police, and I suggest every minority to arm themselves and learn self-defense. The founding fathers would be rolling in their graves if they saw all the gun laws on the books.
I remember there was a TV series on Fox some time ago called Sleepy Hollow, and it involved, you know, the main character was Ichabod Crane, who got transported from Revolutionary War era America to the present day, and he comments about how much tax he's paying on a Starbucks coffee and says he wouldn't have put up with this. So, yeah, it's... you know, despite the kind of argument I got into with, you know, last summer, I think, with some one of your callers, gun control laws, if you go and look at every single one of them, they have their roots in racism. They are passed to prevent certain people from owning guns. In New York, the law that they're challenging before the Supreme Court was passed in, I think it was 1907, it's called the Sullivan Law, and it was targeted at the Irish.
Here, let's...
Those are the people...
Let me get to Craig. Craig, make your comment, please.
Yeah, I was just thinking, well, where can we look at, for an example? And I look at Texas. Texas has among the most open-minded gun laws. And if it were truly the fewer gun laws or the more open carry, the more the right of the gun owner, if that were to hold true, then Texas should be a bloodbath state, but it's not. And we look at states that have really restrictive gun laws, and those are the places that are the bloodbaths.
Do we have stats? Does anybody have stats on that?
Well, Chicago
if you go back to restricted arms and you go through I went through an analysis of some numbers that appeared in USA Today a few years ago that they were using for an editorial to kind of support more gun control. And if you remove the numbers for suicide, the rankings of, you know, deaths per, you know, from firearms deaths change all over the place. California goes from top 10 to the low teens. Other states, you know, Idaho jumps way up if you count suicides.
Let me squeeze in a couple more.
Are a whole different problem.
Rob and Atascadero on the Stahlberg line. Personal identification of gun owners has nothing to do with research. Text number two. I don't like guns, but with the increase of crime and the lowered response time ability of law enforcement, I find one for home protection necessary. Number three. Is it possible to use fake guns in the movies?
Well, it's computer. It can, you can computer generate a gun now in a movie, Matt.
Yeah, if you've got that big of a budget, that does take some doing. Again, what the rookie's doing with using an airsoft gun that looks real and the actor can actually pull the trigger, but you add the muzzle flash and the noise in post production, that's probably something that's relatively cheap and achievable. You know, widespread in the movie industry. You know, painting a gun into somebody's hand with CGI is probably difficult to make that look good and realistic.
Last text, is it the laws that create the bloodbath, or is it in reaction to the bloodbaths that there are laws? That could be a whole other segment. Instead, I will thank Matt Hoy for a great discussion and invite you to check out his website at restrictedarms.com and give him 15 seconds for a final thought.
Here's hoping that the Supreme Court adds some clarity to what the standard is for gun laws in this country, because it's been a wide disparity among the judicial circuits.
All right, Mr. Hoy, thank you. Again, his website is restrictedarms.com. Thanks to all our guests today. Thanks to Craig Hill for his help, and thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.